Okay, we're about a week and a half removed from Rough and Rowdy 2, which featured what many people are calling the greatest fight in Rough and Rowdy history, the main event. Sean Latham, the $20 chef, taking on Adam Smitty Smith. And I've got both fighters with me here. I'm Robbie Fox, and we're going to be doing a bit of a Fighters Tell All, a one-off podcast where we're going to take you through the whole build-up of the fight itself, the aftermath, with both fighters talking about it with each other publicly for the first time since. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Yes, sir.
No problem. Greatest fight in Rough and Rowdy history or all of history?
Well, maybe we'll say all of history.
That was a solid 1.1 rounds we had there.
It was. It really was.
the arms started flailing.
Yeah, it was an electric 5 minutes in history, including the 2 minutes in between rounds one and two and two and three, where you guys were on the stool and Light Switch Lou and Pat McAfee were just screaming at the top of their lungs. It was amazing, and we're going to get into the actual fight itself. We'll get into the walkouts, the post reactions, but we're going to start at the beginning. Barstool buys Rough and Rowdy. We acquire it, and it seemed like for you, Sean, you wanted in right away. Is that true?
Yeah, well, you know, and I think Dave was at our office here in Indianapolis, and, you know, I've trained for quite some time, but I've never been in a real fight, like, where it was people watching, and if you get knocked out, you're going to be embarrassed. It was just, I just sparred a shitload and trained for a year with, like, regular dudes. I mean, more than average dudes, but not in any kind of scenario where someone was really trying to, you know, make you go to sleep, you know?
Yeah, so what was your training before we bought Rough and Rowdy? What was your combat sports experience like? Because the murmurs in the office, I mean, we heard everything you've ever, you know, dreamed of. We heard, oh, yeah, Sean's been in 20 amateur fights in Mexico. He's been, you know, he's a trained killer. Like, we heard ridiculous rumors about you. What was your combat sports experience?
Yeah, that was all bullshit. Even, like, I had to even, like, let some people know on Twitter, I'm like, I've never fought in a real fight outside of just street fights and then I've only fought for like the last, since I moved to Indianapolis, I started training and sparring, but it was more of a 60-40 split. I was doing more jiu-jitsu than I was boxing, but we would still spar. You know, I still sparred a lot over that period of time. And then about 5 months before Rough and Rowdy is when things slowed down because I started working for Barstools and my schedule changed completely. So I didn't have that time. I couldn't be there at 9 in the morning anymore to train with those guys. So, but I mean, going into it, I assumed that it would be like sparring. So like when I spar, you get your ass beat, but it's just way more technical. So I felt so much more technical going into it. But I had never been in no fights or anything like that. I'd never been in an amateur fight. I was tossing around the idea of trying, you know, golden gloves because of my last eligible year, 39. So I was, but that was it. I mean, just sparring with those guys who were taking it easy on me anyways, because in the gym where I fight, where I spar or do jiu-jitsu, I'm literally like a third grader around a bunch of fathers.
Yeah, of course.
That's, and you know, so.
So after Rough and Rowdy won, after Tex and Hank, Dave said on the broadcast right away, he said, come back, you know, February, we're going to have Rough and Rowdy 2, and the $20 chef will be fighting. Now, Smitty, you heard that, and a few days later, you came up to me, and I remember this specifically. You said, hey, what do you think about me versus Sean in Rough and Rowdy?
Yeah, I really wasn't thinking about it that much, especially when Prez said that. Sean, I think we met one time, and my recollection was we had pretty similar body types, but like the rumors going around, I had no idea like what your experience was. And when I was having my discussions with Prez, I had two stipulations behind me fighting in Rough and Rowdy. Number one is Barstool covers any sort of medical expenses that may occur after, because I almost had my nuts clipped in softball over the summer, and there were discussions about who was paying for that, and still on the hook for that. But that was number one. And number two was to make sure that you had no real professional experience in the ring. And One thing that sticks out to me the most, just talking to you from when we were training, is you said that, you know, doing this, the biggest thing you learn is there are a lot of people out there who don't look like they can kick your ass, but they can fucking kick your ass. Mm-hmm. And that is 1,000% true when it comes to boxing and fighting. Because you don't, if you get in there with someone with any sort of experience or somebody who's been there before, in that atmosphere extensively, you're a dead man. You're absolutely a dead man. I mean, you just technically is one thing, but just learning how to control your breathing and to just channel the atmosphere and be able to counterpunch. I mean, there's so much that goes into this, for lack of a better word, ballet.
Yeah.
In the fucking ring that you just don't experience.
I mean, it is the sweet science. I'm sure you could find 115-pound girls that could pick you apart completely, you know.
I mean, you especially.
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course. So, Chef, did you have an opponent in mind if Smitty hadn't stepped in? Was there a plan B of, like, were you just going to fight any, you know, random redneck from West Virginia? Or was it, did you have someone in mind?
No, actually, whenever Dave brought up Rough and Rowdy and personalities fighting, and he was like, I just randomly go, I'll do that. Like, that's literally how it happened. He was just, and like five or six people in our office were kind of like, yeah, we would do that. You know, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then just somehow between then and the end of Rough and Rowdy 1, Prez just decided to throw my name in there because we didn't have like a discussion about it.
Of course.
That's so typical. I figured it was a very serious discussion.
Yeah,
now that I hear this, it's so obvious that there wasn't one in place.
Jesus.
And then Smitty,
yeah, you can't go back from that once you hear that. Like, okay,
no.
I guess we're doing it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, I saw the tweets and I was just like, well, I guess I'm fighting in this. You know?
That's so Barstool. So Smitty came up to me and said, what do you think about me, Sean? And I remember exactly what I said. I said, I think that'd be a great fight. I said, I think that'd be, I was like, it'd be tough. I said, you'd have to train, but I think that'd be a great fight. And eventually that, you know, came to fruition. Did you guys have a conversation before it was announced?
The first time I was approached about this, I remember I was hammered after an Eagles game on a Sunday, and Pat McAfee FaceTimed me, and you obviously don't turn down a Pat McAfee FaceTime.
No, he's a huge FaceTime guy.
Yeah, and I answered it. I was with the old lady on the street court in New York. We're going to actually the Barstool Fantasy football party, which I guess had been early December, late November. And Pat was saying, you know, you fight the $20 chef. Let's go. Let's do this. And, you know, initially, I'm just like, yeah, let's go. Let's see. I want you fucking fight.
Especially Pat. He's so, like, happy. He hypes you up for everything. Like, he could have made you think you were going to fight Tyson.
Yeah, pretty much.
And he would have been like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and I remember my response. I'm like, oh, how about I fight you, Cuzzo? Why don't you step in the ring? He just gets all serious. Like, Cuzzo, I'd fucking kill you. like, yeah, you're probably right. But after hanging that phone up and, you know, thinking about it a couple days, you know, I'm not necessarily a fighter. You know, I played sports growing up, never boxed. Been in a couple scruffles here and there, especially like in college where, you know, the D3 football team fought the D3 lacrosse team in a frat house basement. I'm pulling people off of each other. And, you know, we're looking at each other. Oh, we're going to do this? Ah, okay, let's take a swing. But nothing like anything serious like this.
Or organized.
Yeah, we're organized. But after thinking about it, number one, from a business standpoint, I mean, obviously it was good for both of us. It was good for Barstool. It was good for Heartland. It was good for New York HQ. But on a personal level, you know, I mean, you're 39, Sean. Like, God bless you. I don't know how you are in as good of a shape as you're in. At 33, like, compared to what I was when I was even 30, like, I feel like the wheels are falling off. So I kind of looked at it as like, okay, this is going to force me to get back into game shape a little bit and to see if I can do it again.
A little like Rocky 6, Rocky Balboa, where he's like, let's see if I still got it.
Yeah.
So when this is announced, how did your friends and family take it?
Oh, I purposely held off the announcement and made Dave hold off until after the holidays so I wouldn't have to hear from it from my family. But
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Family, my uncle was an amateur boxer. He was more concerned at anything because
he knows what goes into something
exactly,
like this. Yeah,
exactly. He made sure he hammered that I get as good as training as possible going. And to be honest with you, Sean, like if I didn't know that you were getting training at all, like I probably would have had a completely different mindset going into this. I might not even got trained at all. I might just ran and just showed up and been like, okay, 3 minutes, let's fucking do this. The fact that you were taking it this seriously, I'm just like, I can't. I have to be 100% dedicated to this over the 4 to 6 weeks going in, or else I'd be a dead man.
Yeah, well, the whole office over here was just like, yeah, you're a lazy slob. You're not going to fucking commit. And then I was just like, you know, I'm a lazy ass slob now because I'm 39 and I make all my money because I'm funny and I talk. But I mean, I've not been a lazy slob for that for, you know, my entire fucking life. It just happens when you get in your late 30s, you know?
Yeah, you worked your ass off to become a lazy slob.
Yeah, it took me a lot of work to become a lazy slob. But then I just was like, well, all right, well, fuck it. And then, you know, Pat was like, my buddy Damien, who I already trained with, Pat just like, all right, well, let's just hire him as a trainer and then I'll train with you. So, I mean, we had to take it serious. And plus, there's a lot of money on the line. And so that's why we were just like, let's fucking go. I mean, you know, we already knew you were already in shape, dude. You weren't little. You know, I knew you were at least 6'2", 200, 6'1", 6'2", 200.
It's definitely the fear aspect had a lot to do with everything. The fear of getting embarrassed and getting knocked out was probably my number one motivation.
Yeah, so let's get into the training. I guess we could start with Sean because you had the Ivan Drago-esque system going into this where you had Damon, you had a trainer, you had the Heartland office, you had the private jets and all of that. What was the daily routine for you leading into this fight as far as like actual boxing training goes?
Well, real quick, to address the private jet situation, that only happened because we didn't know what the fucking way in. We were going to take a car there. We had two vans rented. There was no jet involved. And then we figured out that there was no way in hell we would make the way in. So then Pat said, all right, let's just get a fucking plane, and then we'll ride the bus back. Now,
okay.
As far as the training, yeah. I mean, I saw everybody going off on that. I'm just like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Well, you got to admit, that's material. That's material.
From the outside, looking in, I definitely thought like, look at this. Pat's getting his prize fighter, a private jet. This
is unbelievable. We were delayed 10 hours at LaGuardia.
The worst airport in the country.
Yeah, great ammo. I mean, I respect the shit-fucking aspect of it. But now that it's over, I need to make sure motherfuckers know that I sure as hell can't afford it. And I know Pat can, but we only did it to make the win.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the training goes, boxing training, Damien is a really good fighter. He's got probably 30-some fights under his belt. He's an MMA guy. But he's also an athletic trainer for a couple of universities before he stopped to fight. And so he was. He happened to hurt his shoulder at the perfect time where he didn't have any work at the time. He couldn't train. He wasn't fighting. So it was like the most perfect timing. So Pat was like, here, I'll pay you this much. Will you want to do it? So he was all aboard. It was just great timing. So he was here. And we have, you know, Pat has so many connections from his past, like with Borowitz, his trainer from college. So it just worked out. And then I would just train boxing. You know, we got a bag here, and I bought like mitts, and I got a handful of dudes around town that I already trained with sparring here and there at the gym with like Lytle and those guys. So we just started sparring like once or twice a week at least. But then like week three, I sparred this one kid. He's probably like 26. This kid Teddy, he's just one big ass piece of muscle, and he's a trainer for Title Boxing, which isn't technically where you're becoming trained to fight. It's a cardio thing. But the guy still is doing nothing but throwing punches fucking 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And that guy fucked me up. Like, it was blood flying around. He really, like, my nose, I couldn't spar for, like, I forced it week three. For, like, 2 weeks, for a week and a half, I couldn't touch my nose. Like, putting a shirt on, my shit was just in absolute pain. I couldn't blow my nose. I couldn't touch my nose for a week and a half. And then that second week, it started to come back around. So the third week, I started sparring again. And then, I mean, so my nose barely came around by the time the fight happened, where I can put a shirt on or touch it.
Jeez. And then, was that the worst like injury you sustained through training?
Yeah, I have a collarbone situation here that hurt, but I think that's from sleeping on it wrong. But it would still hurt. But it didn't do it. It wasn't enough to make me not be able to fight.
Yeah, people don't understand. That, like, it's not necessarily the 3 minutes in the ring that was the issue. It's the 6 weeks leading up that get your ass kicked every single day. Sparring is fighting with headgear. That's the only difference.
Yeah.
It's fucking boxing with headgear, and you're boxing people better than you who can willingly kick your ass.
And who are trying to push you so they are going to kick your ass, you know, time and time again.
You finish your story, and I'll go into my sparring sessions or ass kicking.
Yeah. Yeah, I would bring three guys in, so it was all different three levels. Teddy was like fucking almost 15 years younger than me, way faster and all muscle, and he never sparred even, like legitimately fought. So he was actually, I shouldn't even fought him because he was just fighting like it was a real fight, not sparring like the other guys spar. Mm-hmm. And then I fought a guy that had some experience, but I definitely had an advantage over him, and I was beating him pretty good. And then there was another guy who was like 6'9", like lineman from Louisville, he's fucking dropped me a few times at the gym. with body shots and shit, and Heath would spar. So that, I would do that. I would get like three dudes in a row, and then I had another guy also that would come separately. But
wait, say how many times a week did you spar leading up to this?
For the first few weeks, three, and then that second or third week, I got fucking roughed up pretty bad. Mm-hmm. So I took two weeks off from sparring. I just hit mitts, hit bag, and trained. And then the last week, I did about two or three times.
Gotcha.
And sparring, I mean, technically, I was so like confident because I was like, you know, I was feeling much more confident. I was seeing a lot of punches, mm-hmm. and I was in and out, and I felt really good technically. I was like, that's why I was really confident. I was like, well, technically, I don't think that, you know, he's had the time to catch up. Exactly. Like, you haven't had enough training to catch up to be as technical. Now, if you did the same amount of training as me, you'd be as technical, if not more, mm-hmm. because it's just about reps. It's not about talent. It's about reps.
Exactly. And sparring is the best way possible to get yourself up to speed.
Oh, yeah.
That. Like, you can't simulate. Yeah. You can't simulate anything with sparring, nope. whether you're just hitting the bag or running. Like, you spar, you learn how to fight.
Yeah, that holds true for pretty much all combat sports. They say the only way to, and that's why they say ring rust is such a big thing. When fighters take time off and then come back, they say that you could have been working out harder than you've ever worked out, but once you actually get back in the ring, you can't simulate it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, even like when we got to the ring finally, I had a great conversation with Matt Mitrione after the fight. And Chris Lytle, and they were just like, well, now you get it. Like, it doesn't matter how much you spar or how much you do anything or how much you train. Like, because when I was done with that fight, I've never been that tired in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I had a lot of respect that you could even get out and walk and go do the interview.
Dude, I was looking at you. I was looking at you. I'm like, how is this motherfucker still upright? The only reason I was standing because I didn't want to be the one that collapsed.
Oh, I had to hold on to the ropes for a good 2 minutes. They had to, like, get me the fuck out of there for the next fight. And then when I climbed out of the ring and I was like, I'm gonna fall down these stairs, but I didn't want to be a bitch.
Exactly.
So I just fucking like every ounce of I had left just to walk down those stairs right to a chair that was 2 feet in front of the ring, where I sat for another 5 minutes at least before I had to like will myself to just walk over to the fucking table to talk to the guys for the press conference or whatever.
Yeah,
that was the most tired I've ever been.
One thing my trainers hammered that I didn't necessarily believe until afterwards was that take all your adrenaline, all the energy that you have, basically everything you got, toss 50% of it out the window because the atmosphere and the adrenaline, everything's going to get to you once you're in there. And I was just like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm, you know, I believe you, but you know, I'll see how it works and maybe we'll be able to go through it. Nope. Nope. Not at all. At least 50% was fucking out the window.
So talking about,
you know what?
Go ahead, Sean.
I was going to say, like, one time we had Tito Ortiz on the series show, and Pat said, you have any advice for our guy who's about to fight in an amateur fight? He goes, however hard you think you're training, do more, because it's not going to be enough, and whatever you think is false. It's not enough. And that was, like, the most true thing in the ring. Because even, like, when I'm sparring, like, I was sparring for, you know, I'd spar 5 and 6 3-minute rounds, and I was just like, dude, there's no way that I'm not going to be able to do 3 minutes. When I'm doing 10 or 15 minutes of spar sessions, you know, in a night, you know, like back to back, like three-minute fight, 2-minute rest, 3-minute fight, 2-minute rest. I was like, this is a whole fight each round. And it just doesn't, it's just a different ballgame when it's fight or flight, for real.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So flipping it over to Smitty, your daily routine, your training going into this fight, what was that like? Was this the first time you had ever even been in a boxing gym?
Yeah. Seriously, like I went to check out Mickey's Golden Gloves gym at Meraki, that's now defunct. But like, I've been going to no free ads, but Mendez Brothers boxing gym. Great little spot, 26th and Madison. They will turn boys into men and men into killers if you want to go that route.
Yep.
But they will also beat the living shit out of you along the way. It's the same place where Hank trained, and honestly, it's just a dingy sweatbox.
Yep.
Filled with like Puerto Ricans, half of them are ex-cons, and they just teach you how to box. And I went in there with I think a little under 6 weeks.
So what was that conversation like when you first went in? So Hank had trained there, maybe they knew a little bit about Rough and Rowdy.
It was good that Hank went in first because I was assimilated into the atmosphere and the culture pretty seamlessly. If Hank was not there first, I would have been very, very intimidated just going in and trying to basically even just listen to what they say. Because the boxing gym atmosphere where everyone's there like training for a fight, it's something out of a fucking movie. You can't even really explain it. Everyone is just kind of like everywhere at once, just like kind of doing their own thing, and everyone just seems like a professional fighter and very technical. Meanwhile, I don't even know how to punch a bag.
And,
like,
and you're about to box for more money than any of these guys on a pay-per-view watched by more than, you know, that's going to watch these. Like, you're under the brightest lights and you know nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I did a video with a viral video a couple years ago with a guy from FightSmart.com who did a viral video trying to duck and dodge punches, and we did it drunk because that's how normal, you know, bar fights happen. And like looking back at it, I don't know if I'm like a lefty or a righty. I'm switching up. I'm going down. I'm getting gassed like after one punch. There's so much to learn that the normal people just don't know. So I was extremely intimidated going into Mendez the first time, but they treat it as a very family atmosphere, which helped.
Yep.
They beat the shit out of me, but it was for a reason. They called me a pussy, but it was for a reason. I sparred with my trainers, who were like 5'5 Puerto Ricans, the first three or four times, and I didn't spar that much. I think I sparred 5 times total.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was that raw going in.
Yeah.
They did not want me to get in the ring and actually throw punches against someone, even them, until I was, A, had enough wind under me. Because I was in shape, but I wasn't in boxing shape.
Yeah, of course.
At all.
So, yeah, it's a different ballgame.
Exactly. Yep. So for the first 2 weeks of training, they would just condition the fuck out of me and then try to teach me how to box, like, when I couldn't even lift my arms. It was futile. It was a futile experiment.
Yeah.
And then eventually they put me into the ring with them, and obviously they're better than me, so they held back a little bit. And I was getting, you know, I was getting my fighting legs under me a little bit. And then, Sean, like your experience, they put me in with like a 6'4 amateur boxer who beat the living hell out of me. I completely
close.
Yeah, they threw. I was training 3 3-minute rounds with a minute rest in between. I made it through a 1.5 rounds before my trainer threw in the towel. Like, he legitimately would have killed me. Like, and he wasn't holding anything back. I was definitely concussed. My nose was swollen. It was the Friday before Super Bowl week. I sported a black eye all during the Super Bowl. My wits weren't about me. My wits weren't about me for at least 3 or 4 days after that. But I'll tell you what, if I didn't take those hits during that sparring session, I would have went down the first time you hit me clean.
Yeah, and you had to kind of build up a chin.
I wouldn't even say build up a chin, just you don't know what it feels like until it happens.
Yeah.
And he fucking...
Yeah, it's a shocking thing.
Exactly. Like, when you get hit and you see white, like what happened against that 6'4 guy and what happened against you, it's scary as shit. But since it happened then, and I was like, okay, I don't want this to happen, but if it does, I know I can kind of, you know, survive it and keep going forward. I mean, it helped out immensely. And then Super Bowl week happened. All I did during Super Bowl week was just run my ass off twice a day and not drink, mostly, except for like 1 or 2 nights. And afterwards came back, sparred once more early in the week, and that was basically it.
So in the build-up publicly, everything that we saw on camera, it seemed like, obviously, you had your battles with Dave, your battles with Nate, your battles with Michael Rapaport. And Sean, you had a huge system behind you where you weren't really fighting with anyone at Heartland. The Heartland is a very friendly, loving office, very different from HQ. And you were the more vocal one in the build, I felt, Sean, at least in the general fight way, in the I'm going to rip your head off way. Smitty got there towards the end of the build, I think, but you had other battles to worry about, and you weren't as, I guess, malicious towards Sean himself. And now you guys obviously have nothing against each other, but in the fight game, you kind of have to fabricate rivalries. Why did you make the choice to kind of just stay more subdued?
Well, that's more of my personality. It would have came off initially as very, very forced and very fake if I would have done it. Because that's not just it's not my personality, and no shame or hate on anybody who like does go that route, but it's just I'm more of a sit back, relax, and prove it on the field kind of guy. I never talk shit growing up playing sports. That's not really my thing now. I mean, that's exactly why I had Lou in my corner, because I knew it would be perfect for Lou to do that and be my voice. I knew it going in. That's why I had offered Nate to be my manager, yep. because I knew if Nate was just doing the talking, I could focus on just staying quiet and doing my thing and keep everything genuine. But, of course, Nate's a little shit and wouldn't hop on. But, I mean, my personality is a pretty laid-back, subdued kind of guy, and you know, it just would have come off as very, very forced in the beginning if I was like that.
And Sean, you were quite the opposite. You were having fun with the build, it seemed. Is that true? Were you taking cues from old school pro wrestling and boxing and Ali and all that?
Yeah, 100%. I was, you know, that's why early on when I was doing the shit talking was about, that's why I kept saying he's a variable. He's a variable. Like, yeah. We'd have no beef, but we do because we have to fight each other. Because I wasn't going to make up a fake problem we had.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was just like, it's just like, listen, we have to fight, and this is what you do. Like I was just trying to generate interest, and I mean,
which was smart, and it was great, and it all worked out. Like what Robbie said, like before, I had a million separate things going on. The Smitty versus everyone was obviously exaggerated, but Christ, I wasn't exactly concentrating on the fight 100%. I had the fucking Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That was like the greatest thing in my life. So like to be able to,
but I was happy. I was like the whole time. Like, I want the Eagles to win. Like, let the Eagles win.
And when they did, God damn it.
Yeah, and so I was just building up, just like, you know, like I've watched growing up, whether it would be wrestling or fucking fighting or whatever. I mean, I'm a huge fight fan. I was a wrestling fan for years and years as a kid, and even in my, like, early 20s, and I just is how it is. So that's what I was doing, and it was fun, and it was good for content, and, you know, it made people, like, either get on board with it, or people who were, like, on Smitty's team were, like, telling me to go fuck myself. So that was good, because... Like, now looking back, people who were telling me to fuck off, they're like, hey, listen, I'm on Team Smitty, but I respect that fucking fight. You did a hell of a job, and I'm still a $20 chef fan.